Glenn Mason said a long time ago at the University of Minnesota, you need a pair and a spare.
Thank you, PJ. It is the Pair and a Spare podcast. Justin Gard from KFAN, Chip Scoggins from the Star Tribune, and Ryan Burns from GopherIllustrated.com. Burnsy, 1 week into the engagement, everything good?
It is, especially when you get to go celebrate a wedding in Kenosha. I think Chip and I both enjoyed our time in the state just east of us here. Chip,
I had family weekend. I didn't have a wedding, but I had family weekend. The whole family, my daughter had fall break from Kansas, so she was with us, and we went over to see our son, who's a freshman at Wisconsin, and we actually were on the field.
Shocker, strip guy on the field at Wisconsin.
Yeah, I'm sure that didn't take much. Oh, Star Tribune, yeah, we love you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, we love all the positive coverage for the Badgers over here. Yeah, come on over. You want to see the axe? Can we take you around the Kohl Center?
Just can't believe that.
For our listeners.
You want to talk to Greg Gard about more Lakeville North kids that we're going to celebrate going across the border? Sure. Come on over, Chip.
I wish our listeners could have been in on our group text when I sent the photo of my family and I at midfield at Camp Randall. You threatening to tweet it out from Pair to Spare pod.
So it's only a matter of time.
That's
yeah,
right.
It's only a matter of time. I like the one with you and Barry Alvarez, too. That was good, where you kind of had your arm around him. Was that at the State Street Brats? Yeah, where were you?
Oh, we did. We did do State Street Brats. It was.
You have to. You have to.
My freshman has found that.
Yeah.
he's put that one on the circuit.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
So, yeah, it's a fun time to be with family again. But and college football is fun to.
Crazy.
I love bye week so you can actually watch college football.
It's true, and I actually got to because my daughter was sick.
Yeah, tell this story.
And we were supposed to go to, Dan Barrera, who I work with on The Fan, for those that are listening in Malawi that might not be familiar with KFAN, he said, so what's bye week like? You know, you just relaxing. I'm like, oh, this was, you know, the second that it's like, oh, October 9th is bye week, here's what we're doing with the kids Friday night, here's what we're doing with the kids Saturday, here's what I'm doing, and when I say me, I mean my wife, here's what I have scheduled. That's how it works. But so we were supposed to go to Great Wolf Lodge. We did go to Great Wolf Lodge, kind of. We didn't stay overnight because my daughter was sick, so the boys went with my wife, which was tremendous because they got their experience. Little Jilly slept on me for like 4 hours, watched the entire Iowa-Penn State game, flipped over to a couple of others, and got to go to the water park Sunday morning. So it was all good. It was nice to have nothing to do last week, though.
Yeah.
It is nice.
Although you do
nice.
Feel guilty, like when you work every weekend, telling your spouse, yeah, I'm just going to sit here on the couch and watch football all day. Yeah, I'm not sure that's right answer.
Had we not had the Great Wolf Lodge excursion, no, I would not have seen a second. I would
no,
have said
you'd been picking pumpkins and apples. Bro.
Exactly yeah. Right. Yep, and we've got family photos next Sunday, or this Sunday.
Lucky you.
Yeah, probably right during the Vikings game, but, you know, whatever. Who cares? By the way, if you ever want to do something in town and have no lines, just do it during the Vikings game.
Yeah.
And DVR it later. That's actually that's a good hack for everybody. So, all right, engagement's good. Wedding was good.
Yep.
Saw you on Monday. It looked like you were still banged up a little bit, so you're still living your best life.
I got, like, my heel hurts. I got, like, plantar fasciitis now. I'm on the IR from all the dancing I was doing, and I lost my voice on Sunday. It was just – I'm so glad we didn't have Gopher Football Sunday, or else, Chip, you would have had to go back-to-back because it was just squeaking.
We saw Birdsey, and he had the morning after voice. You know that one.
I vaguely remember that.
My Barry White voice was in full effect yesterday at the press conference. I told Greeter when I got there, I just hope my voice doesn't crack when I'm asking PJ a question, and thank God it didn't.
That's good. That's good. Well, we're glad you're here, and you look like you're about 75%. So, you know,
yeah, we're getting there.
Yeah, we're getting there.
Well, you get to be my age, it's a little slower in the morning.
Trust me, we know, man. We want to thank Northern Lids, northernlids.com, for sponsoring the podcast each and every week. Go to northernlids.com to check out new hats, check out custom-made, super cool patch-style hats. They're amazing. They do a lot of great work. You can follow them at Northern Lids on Twitter. Highly recommend that you do that, but we appreciate them jumping in and helping us out here, northernlids.com. All right, we mentioned the PJ Fleck press conference. There was really one main topic, and we've actually got some breaking Gopher news as well that we're going to get to, but it was more or less all about Trey Potts, right? And the update, really the first official update we got from head coach PJ Fleck on what happened to Trey Potts at Purdue, what has happened since then with Trey Potts, and what will happen with Trey Potts here moving forward. What did we learn yesterday at the press conference, boys?
Yeah, just that I don't think it's any great surprise that he's not going to play this year again. When you talk to people behind the scenes and just kind of the realistic view of it, when a guy's in a hospital for 6 days afterwards, you know it's a serious thing, and you know that that's not just something you rush back from. And so I guess the larger question now, and I asked PJ about this yesterday, is, okay, this is the year, but do you get any sense, or is it too early to know is his football career done? And PJ kind of left the door open, said it's too early for that. But we have to talk about the impact on the football, but I think all of us agree that the number one thing above any football or anything. It's just that this young man has a full recovery and gets his health back and can lead a productive life.
Yeah, we still don't know what the injury is specifically. I'm sure it'll come out here as time continues to go on from the Potts family. Again, that's Fleck's whole deal, whether it was Mo with the Achilles or Potts with whatever it is now. He wants the kid to have
control
over what it is and how it comes out. So for everybody angry about we don't know what it is, well, we'll see if and when Potts wants to release that. But you feel bad for the run first team that has now their first two running backs.
We're at the air now, baby.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about the pair and a spare in the air, and we're at the air.
It is. And I mean, even long term here, before we get into the solutions here for Nebraska, it's like, who do you think is more likely to play another down, Trey Potts or Mo Ibrahim at the University of Minnesota?
Oh, man. I'd say neither.
Yeah, I would.
I mean, Trey Potts, because technically that door has been left open, and we think Mo's probably going to move on. I would if I were him. Right, but also Mo's different. I mean, Mo's like Tanner. I mean, they might be here for the next decade still.
Yeah, I would say, you know, Mo would probably move on, but does he have to show anything?
Hard to know. I mean, to get drafted high,
yes.
But to get an opportunity, probably not.
Not to get an opportunity, even
get drafted, I think. Again, his collegiate resume is sensational, but I think everybody here knows the track record of NFL running backs with Achilles injuries, and so
yeah.
I don't know what's going to happen there. And then obviously with Trey, with whatever the, I guess, internal injury is with him, I mean, it's a quality of life thing too.
And a risk. And that without knowing what it is, but just that's something him and his family would have to weigh, is the risk worth it? And you'd have to get, I assume, major clearance from doctors that they feel comfortable putting you back out, letting you go back out there. So, yeah, it wouldn't be surprise me if we don't see either running back again, which is sad, you know, because
Potts was starting to establish himself.
No question.
Yeah,
I mean, no question.
We've talked about him for months now. I mean, mm-hmm. he's a good Big Ten running back, and now we're gonna find out what you got. I mean, I don't know what you two would do, but I wrote about it yesterday on Gopher Illustrated. I think it's time to give it to the young kids.
Well, yeah.
I think you have to.
That's your option.
They're your best guys.
Yeah. Clearly they were trending that way anyway behind Trey, so I don't know. That's where they were on the depth chart, talking about Bucky and talking about Kai Thomas, right?
And I think I added up 43 carries between Irving Thomas, Cam Wiley, and Bryce Williams this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Cam Wiley was at 6 and Bryce was at 5, so they were getting phased out anyways before this. Now, does this change things in terms of you want to have a little more experience with it? I don't think so. I think you go with your best guys at this point.
Yeah.
And I think that's your two freshmen. And so, but even PJ admitted yesterday, he's like, we don't really know.
Right.
You don't know.
Until you go.
The lights come on. I mean, that's the whole deal. I mean, you look at Bryce Williams. Since that 2018 true freshman magical season, he has the couple touchdown runs against Wisconsin to help Minnesota beat Madison in Madison. He's had 27 carries since then, in 2019, 2020, and 2021, it's 27 carries for 34 yards.
Mm-hmm.
What's the outlier? What's not? And then Cam Wiley hasn't played since the Miami of Ohio game. He's been a healthy scratch. I mean, I think you're going to need both of them at some point.
Yes.
But
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't think PJ can change who he is, but I don't know that this offense can function the way he wants it to.
100%.
It has to be a passing offense now.
Well, more than it has been.
Passing in air quotes.
100%.
Well, that's the big thing is, I mean, I've seen a lot of people on GR, even on Twitter, saying they got to open it up. Okay, well, if I told you they're going to throw the ball 25 times a game now, to me, that's in air quotes here, opening it up.
I agree.
Because Tanner's throwing the ball, 18 times, one or more times?
Yeah.
Just once or twice in the first five games? So, if they throw the ball 7-8 more times,
but
they're going to have to.
And this is where you wonder if they'll add in new wrinkles, where it's more screens, more safer passes, more high percentage to kind of use those as de facto running plays instead of just more deep shots.
Right.
I mean, I like that they took those against Purdue, but I don't know that you can throw 15 of those in a game.
Right.
You need to have some high percentage things, slants and screens to sort of serve as a running game.
When we think they're going to have Dalen Wright back, we know they've got Crabb.
Well, that's the other thing.
Daniel Jackson, what do we think?
Yeah, Crabb's about as healthy as he's going to be now after half a bye week. Daniel Jackson was banged up a little bit. You have Dalen Wright back, who got back last week during the bye. I mean, you're also got to factor into this whole running equation. I bet you we see as much Cole Kramer as we saw against Purdue in each game going forward. Eventually, you have to throw out of it. Now, I feel like I said that all last year with Seth Green and then threw it, what, twice? But how big were those impactful plays? But it's going to be, I mean, again, with Bucky, he's a true freshman. Kai Thomas is a freshman. And these guys just don't have a lot of experience. So, yes, you can ride them. But you also have to ride, most importantly here, Mike Sanford and P.J. Fleck, your fourth-year quarterback with now as healthy as you've been and with your skill position players on the outside, your pass catchers.
And don't you get the sense that you're going to see a lot of Cole Kramer sneaks, like eight of those a game?
Well, given that they gave an entire series to it against Purdue, now some of that could have been the elements, some of that could have been what was going on. I don't know. Yeah, probably. I would think so. Mix it up a little bit, give people a different look. They've just – by the way, they've had a bye to figure it out, too. I mean, if you want to say, wow, this came at an interesting time, it did, because they've had a week and change, because they obviously knew pretty early on that Trey wasn't going to factor into their plans when he's still in the hospital late last week. It's like, well, he's not just going to line up and play for Nebraska against Nebraska.
Right.
So you've had a bye week to get in the lab, so to speak. I know they were recruiting and stuff, but so they – I mean, we'll see if they come up with new stuff.
And, you know, I understand doing that more short yardage, but – what is that really going to gain you? You're not going to get big plays out of that. You might move the stick some.
I'd argue you would if you ever threw a play action on
and
it.
And they might,
if they do, if they add that wrinkle versus just, hey, we got to get eight more runs out of this. Yeah.
I say that, but how many times have we ever seen Seth Green throw it in 3 years? Five
there were
or
a couple.
Six?
Yeah. I remember a handful. Yeah.
But we said this after Mo went down. Trust your fourth-year senior quarterback.
Right.
Trust these wide receivers. And yes, the wide receivers have been in flux with injuries and in Daylon's situation, but you got him back. I think it's time to, you know, you have to adjust in a, I don't know if dramatic's the right word, but in a meaningful way, because I just don't think, all right, let's get Bucky 22 carries.
Right.
I just don't know that that's realistic.
And I'm curious how the balance is going to be with those guys now, because – obviously, there was no balance when Trey was in there. He just basically became the new Mo. So do they try to mix it in more? Because they're different runners, too. I mean, we've seen that. So they have different skill sets and all those things.
When was the last time you saw P.J. Fleck not have a bell cow running back? I mean, we saw it to an extent with Rodney and Shannon
and Mo.
But I think it's a little bit different. You had three established backs there. Where
you
knew
that's how it's different, yeah.
And now you have two freshmen that are inexperienced that maybe you trust, and then you have Bryce Williams and Cam Wiley, who haven't really shown anything in years now. So,
unless one of these guys takes off, which we don't know. I mean, that may happen. If one of them just, you know, hey, all of a sudden light comes on and they're really good and they look like they can handle it, I can see it that. But until we see it, you don't know. And
right.
So
that's where I do think Marquise Irving is probably going to be the guy to get the most touches.
Yep.
And then I would say Kai Thomas, the way Fleck talked about it yesterday, and it sounds like from a few different things at practice, Kai Thomas has seen an elevated workload here. But, I mean, Bryce Williams is still going to have a role, but if you're Cam Wiley now, it's now or never. I mean, same thing with Bryce Williams. It's now or never if you're going to be taken off in this backfield.
And I think we also have to say this offensive line has to be more consistent pass blocking.
Yeah.
Because that's where they've gotten in trouble. And I think that's where maybe less of not having faith in the wide receivers as much as the offensive line hasn't at times been consistent enough to earn that trust to throw the ball out. I mean, we've seen them look overwhelmed trying to pass block at times. So they have to be better. I mean, there's no reason for a group that has that kind of experience and all the accolades that they're getting not to be more consistent as pass blockers.
It's a great transition into the news of the morning here that Curtis Dunlap, who has played in every game for Minnesota at right guard, is now in the NCAA transfer portal. And then I wonder with, and again, what you can believe PFF, you cannot believe PFF. I mean, you talk to some different people around there. I think Curtis, of the six linemen that Minnesota played, was probably the sixth best this year.
Yeah.
And I wonder, you mentioned, I mean, the offensive line has to be better, and I think that's one of the big things now is – that means Blaze Andrews is going to play 100% of the snaps. That means Daniel Faalele is going to play 100% of the snaps. And some of the issues they were having in pass pro is these stunts and twists. Well, again, I don't pretend to be an elite offensive line mind, but I know a guy who is, and Derek Burns. And he thinks some of the issues they were having is they were rotating so much, you'd see a stunt and twist with the guy next to you. Well, then in the next series, that guy's new, and then you can't have that same amount of communication up front. So
I buy into that. I do buy into that.
I think there's something to it. Yeah. I mean – I don't know if it's 100%, but I think there's it contributed to it for sure. Yeah.
Well, I'd like to see a world without having that issue.
Yeah.
To see if it was all of it or if it's just guys have to play better or whatever.
Well,
so
I think
I'm fine
we're
going to
find out because yeah. I wonder if that's the reason why Curtis is now back in the portal, because we talked about it on the way up. Is I mean, Curtis entered the portal last fall, came back out. Now he's back in. Again, I'd imagine there's no more O-line rotation. So now that you have a consistent five up front with Schluter, Olsen, John Michael Schmitz, Blaze Andrews, and Daniel Fa'alele, you're going to need to step it up because this running game is going
to
need it.
Yeah, and I wonder if the coaches came to that same conclusion, like, you know what, we're trying to be too cute, complicated.
For
or,
sure.
Or overthinking this. Yeah. And I, you know, I didn't mind the experiment because if you feel like you have six starters, see if it works. But if they get to the point and said, you know what, it's counterproductive at this point, then go back to the five, and maybe without knowing Dunlap's reasoning, that makes sense that maybe he got that message that, hey, we're going with five and mm-hmm. you're the sixth. And
well,
I still don't understand transferring in the middle of the season. I'm sorry.
Especially putting your name in the portal for a second time. And that's where I wonder. I mean, you watch back the Purdue game and you look at the snap counts. That was Curtis's lowest snap count of the season, or it was Blaze Andrews' highest snap count of the season.
Yeah.
So I wonder if
Curtis was fired up on the sidelines too when they went down and marched and had the Chris Alton Bell. He was taunting the Purdue fans. I felt like he was in the boat, and I was like, "Well, slow down, Curtis. It's first quarter here. Purdue hadn't even had the ball yet. You know, right. I'm sure you don't want that on your conscience the rest of the day." But well, you wonder. You mentioned transferring. You know, and every kid's got a different reason.
Sure.
It's nothing new that kids are transferring now. But I agree with you. It's like if I'm advising him, it's fine if you made the decision you want to leave at the end of the year. But why don't we finish this year and play well, and then you've got six more games to go, here's what I have to offer you, as opposed to now, who knows what he's going to be doing for the next handful of weeks. Obviously, he'll be on scholarship and everything probably to the end of the semester, but what's he going to be doing?
Well, and the other thing is, you're one injury for being a starter.
A great point.
What?
Great point.
I mean, yeah, you may not.
You might be playing running back in November.
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, the way it's going now.
Yeah, it's not like you're number 10.
Right.
You know, you're right there. You're getting snaps, and so you're one ankle sprain from being starting the rest of the game. I don't know his rationale or what's going through his mind, but it just feels strange for someone to transfer midseason that's been
playing
a lot.
Yeah.
So now that means Axel Rushmeyer, who started last year, is now elevated into that sixth offensive lineman role. I think you now have Nathan Bowe, who is the eighth mm-hmm. offensive lineman. Would Minnesota love to go to that package? He's the seventh, so – I mean, I do wonder what this all means for the offense as a whole, because, again, it's tough to speculate because you don't know the kids' reasoning just yet. But, I mean, I do wonder if it was, hey, we're finally – the staff admitted we're getting too cute. We're going to go to 5-0 lineman, Curtis. You're the sixth. And, again, to everyone's point here, how often do offensive linemen get injured? I mean
– A lot.
Constantly. So you're just one play away. Again, I would have given him the same advice. Now, he's not asking for it. Our advice, and I get it. But wait till the end of the season. Go about it that way. I just think he would have had more options at that point.
Yeah, and it's more attractive. If I'm an opposing coach from another thing, it's more attractive for a guy to stick through a season than bail in middle season. But that's, you know, everybody can make their own decisions. But
it's 2021.
Do you think, because of all the things on offense, it just seems like this puts even more pressure on their defense to be really good.
Yeah.
I still wonder, like, how's this offense going to score a mm-hmm. lot of points against good defenses?
Yeah.
It feels like they're going to have to win a different way.
Well, especially the way that PJ wants to play. That's what the mismatch is, and that's why I was going to ask you guys. So we've talked about expectations for this season for a long time, as recently as a couple of weeks ago, what they should be for this season. Have they changed now? I mean, we've said they should be contending for the West. Seems like it's Iowa's to lose at this point. We're going to talk about them in a minute. But after that, Bernsey, you've talked about it a lot. Like, where's the greatness in this division? Like, I still feel like they should be very competitive. But can they move the ball the way they want to move the ball, the way that PJ always has moved the ball against the better teams this particular season? I don't know.
I feel like this weekend's the litmus test. Because
I agree.
Yeah.
Big
because
time.
Because Maryland it looks like they've been exposed here the last couple of weeks. Now, they've played a couple of very good teams mm-hmm. in Iowa and Ohio State. But then you have Northwestern and you have Illinois before Iowa. And if you want to be the West contender, which it's tough to like say offensively what it's going to look like now, because again, it's a run first team. They want to play fleck ball, which is run the ball.
Yeah.
But you're now down, you're All American, and now you're down number two. And now you got to rely on, Like, if you told me they come out and they figured it out in the passing game and they can move the ball against Nebraska that way and they somehow emerge with a victory because they are underdogs at home this weekend, I mean, I tell you, they can still have a shot at this thing because, again, we'll get to Iowa in a bit, but it's a weird spot for them this weekend because I feel like this is going to be the next step in the road where is it going to be you can still contend or is it going to be the injuries have now become too much?
Yeah, and it's I guess I would have a better sense if they were more – had any sort of balance on offense,
right,
which they don't. Then you say, you know what? You can just get a little bit more out of your passing game. It feels like they're going to have to do a complete transformation of who they are and their identity to be able to score those points. I just don't know that they're going to be able to run the ball consistently enough to play the way they want to play. So it feels like it's going to have to be a real reversal of what we've seen offensively. So
yeah.
That's why I wonder – is that going to take some time to kind of adjust to what they want to be, right? I just don't think you can stick to the same, this is who we are, this is our identity, we're not changing,
right?
No matter who the personnel is. I don't know that they can do that right now.
I agree, and you see the best teams, they make the shift if they can. And again, like you said, Bernsey, we're not saying go five wide and throw 45
times. Correct. It's not air raid.
It's not Mike Leach. You know, he's not coming up here. But 25?
I think it
seems reasonable,
25
right?
to 30.
25 to 30.
And in that instance, you're still running the ball 35 times a game.
Correct.
Yeah.
Well, I look at it this way. Let's use the other team in town, the Vikings. Dalvin Cook's hurt all the time. But let's say Alexander Mattison got hurt, and now you've got Amir Abdullah as running back three or Ken Nwangu, who they just drafted.
Yeah.
Like, what would they do? They would probably say, oh, we've got Thielen, we've got Jefferson. I know they don't have Irv Smith, but we've got Conklin or whatever. Like, let's trust our quarterback to make – not, again, crazy throws, because Zimmer and PJ are similar. They want to just run the ball and play situational football and everything. That's what the Vikings would do, right? If they were down to Amir Abdullah and question marks after that, they would just say, we got to do something different. So I'm fascinated to see 11 o'clock Huntington Bank Stadium, what they do.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of overall like expectations, I thought the West would be more wide open than it is. Iowa's clearly the best team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think they've established that. And it's not a fluke. The turnovers and all that at this point. I got some things to say about that.
Let's go ahead. Yeah.
When you've done it this long and you're getting this many.
to an extent.
Something. It is a little bit of magic, you know, luck, whatever you want to phrase it. But they're really good. They're a cut above, I think, everybody else. But when you look at the rest.
Well, look at all the remaining games on the schedule. It's like Iowa's the only one where you're like, okay, Iowa's probably going to be able to get that one. But it's like Nebraska can't win a close game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Maryland has turned back into a pumpkin the last couple of weeks.
By the way, I don't love ripping kids, but Talia turn the ball over is an amazing nickname. I mean, it's just an amazing like, – I feel bad for him, but an Iowa fan, I think, coined that one after he threw six picks. Like, that is a ridiculous nickname.
Oh, it works. But the rest of the schedule is like –
well, Northwestern's not good. Yeah. Illinois is not good. You have Iowa.
Right.
Indiana doesn't look particularly like a top 25 team.
Right.
And then Wisconsin – Graham Mertz in that passing, I mean, Graham Mertz against Illinois was bad.
Being 10 of 19 there, for 100 yards.
Being over pick. There and watching, we went to a bar and watched the game, and there was a deep ball where he had, I think it's Ferguson, wide open. Like, wide, and he couldn't even get the ball there.
Right.
I couldn't, it was, you're watching, it's like, what in the world? I mean, he underthrew him by like 10 yards. And he caught it, but he had to wait on the ball.
Speaking of running back issues, we'll get into that with Wisconsin with their third scholarship running back dismissed already here with Jalen Berger being dismissed here. But it's like, what do you guys think of Nebraska?
I don't know what to think.
I thought they were awful after 1 week. And I watched that Michigan game the other night. And I don't know if that's just, I thought they played pretty darn well.
They did. Yeah.
They play well. They have played well for like the last 6 weeks, but they just cannot find a way to win at the end.
I remember that from Scott Frost's first year when they were 0-6 and the Gophers went down there. And they were 0-6 kind of in the same situation and ran them out of the gym. I mean, that was the day that Zach got hurt, Tanner went in there, all of those things. So, yeah, I mean, they're close. I mean, they're at the point. They can sell that they're close.
That's it. Watching them and just seeing their results, it feels like a team that, there are spurts where you're like, you know what, they're pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And then spurts where you're like, yeah, they're not, this is a, where's it going? So
I think this game's a big one for them, too.
Absolutely.
To see which way they're going to go.
This feels like 2019 Nebraska week. Remember that night game where Minnesota was 5-0, I think Nebraska was 4-1 or something.
Is that where they were? Yeah.
And it was, and we were all, everybody's trying to figure out who's good.
What would, the line now is Nebraska 3.5. Yep. What would that line be if Potts was held? Is that reflective of Potts, or is that just reflective of the
I think Potts
teams?
Is probably worth a – in this instance, probably like a point and a half, just because
so the, I think it's the bettors would have said
– Yeah.
Would have said Nebraska probably even if he was here?
I would think so. Yeah, just I don't the think
way
he, yeah.
Yeah, just the way Nebraska's been playing, because Martinez is playing as well as we've seen. But, again, he has those moments where big turnover, big yeah. spot again. I also think it's an interesting spot for Nebraska because – you know, two things. Their injuries on the offensive line.
Their they just lost another one, too, right?
Yeah, yeah. Teddy yeah. Prohaska, who had been rotating in at right tackle for the former Lakeville kid and Bryce Bennett. Their tackles yeah. are terrible.
They put him back in the other night, and because he got benched, right?
I have never – like, Pro Football Focus, say what you will about it. I went on there, and I looked at him. Can you – anybody want to guess what the left tackle's pass pro grade is? Now, an average Pro Football
Thank
Focus –
Thank you for this context.
Yeah. I had 60. Yeah. It's 60 is average.
All right, so I'm going to say 35.
Yeah, I'd say 30.
Three.
What?
It's three. He has allowed 34
you get that for
pressures
your name on the
himself.
Paper?
He's allowed 34 pressures himself in seven games.
Wow.
The entire Gopher offensive line has allowed 31 through five games. Now, Nebraska,
well, I remember watching him last year. I mean, Boye yeah. Mafe handled him.
Yeah.
And
among
then
others.
Ben Hart has been bad, too.
Yeah. Oh, so, that's what I was talking about. Sorry.
Yeah, the other kid is Turner Corcoran. I mean, their offensive line's been an issue, which is part of the offensive line issue. But it's also, I mean, do you buy into this narrative? Where Nebraska had three straight night games. They were at Michigan State, home against Northwestern, and then they were home last week in a big emotional game against Michigan. Now they got to come up to Minneapolis for an 11 a.m., John.
The early wake-up call? Is that what you're
going
with?
Well, it's three straight night games, three straight emotional games.
I think it's the night games, I don't really, but I do think there is something to be said about when you keep playing, like if you're playing well and losing close games, I think that takes something out of you.
Well,
now,
they
might be able to respond and get up. If they get in a big lead early, it may not matter. But I do wonder. You do worry about a team's psyche when you're losing close games a lot.
It's also their eighth straight game. Like, they've already played seven games where Minnesota's played five.
Mm-hmm.
And Martinez is their leading rusher, whether you want to look at yardage or carries. I mean, he's getting – that was a physical game last week. I don't know what to think of this game coming in.
It's weird. I thought he played good the other night, and then obviously the fumble at the end was not good. But he made some nice plays, and he looked confident. But we've seen that before. He's that tease where you've seen him make plays where you're like, okay, I see where this is going, and then see him struggle with his accuracy throwing the ball. So it's funny. I was thinking about this yesterday, and I was like, are we going to make predictions today? Because I want to think about it all week because this is a weird one to try to – because I don't know the Potts injury. What is the – is there any psychological, emotional thing with the team that does, but more so just – them figuring out their offense.
Well, I worry about the psyche of the coaches. Because we've talked about, like, even going into the Bowling Green game, like, I think they get spun up about how they want to play a game, and I think that trickles down to the team.
Yeah.
Of, well, this is what we're going to do? Okay. So we're going to have no problems with Bowling Green because this is our game plan? Okay. They must suck. And they do, but I don't think they've won since they beat the Gophers.
No.
But I think it can trickle down. The line is 3.5 this morning. Nebraska, as you mentioned, favored the over under 48. So they're thinking that's, like 27-24. It seems kind of high to
me.
That seems high to me based on
the way Minnesota's defense is playing, the way Nebraska's defense is playing. But again, if you were going to have this injury happen, I guess you have it happen on a bye week.
Mm-hmm.
So you get an extra week to think about it and an extra week to make your adjustments. I don't know which way this thing goes. I think it's huge for both.
It's a major game.
Yeah,
I thought the Purdue game was big for the Gophers to respond after the Bowling Green debacle. They did. But now this one, it's like you say, which way is your season going to go?
Well, that and Scott Frost has had issues with Fleck. I mean, last year, Minnesota had no business winning that game at Lincoln.
That was an amazing afternoon. First of all, I was among like 50,000 cardboard cutouts.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, it's like 8 degrees.
Yeah.
Because it's December 5th or December 12th or whenever it was. And there's nobody in Lincoln, which is weird because everybody's always in Lincoln. Like a game day in Lincoln is you know, a holiday. And, I'm used to like a couple dozen cardboard cutouts. And there it's like the parents were basically in the upper deck because all the cutouts were in the first like 30 rows. But, very strange game.
Because you had, again, Minnesota wins 21-14. They're down however many.
4,000 players.
Yeah. But again, Nebraska had all the chances in the world, but they just didn't feel like their coaches knew what the heck they were doing.
No, they looked disorganized.
And then did you call into one of the call-in shows? Because I listened on my way home. It was unbelievable. And this is I don't want to derail this, but my wife still to this day does not appreciate, because I didn't travel with the team last year, does not appreciate how critical the 11 o'clock kick was to get me on the 6 o'clock Omaha flight back home, which got me back on I-80, whatever it is, to go up back up north to Omaha, just in time to listen to all nine parts of the Scott Frost postgame show, which is, I mean, ridiculous. I mean, he's there for like 40 minutes, you know, breaking the game down. PJ would never do that, by the way.
Never.
No coaches would, but Nebraska, you can, and it's brought to you by Nine Banks. And then when I flipped on the call-in show, I thought it was a host talking. No, it was like it was Bill from Bellevue who just wanted to talk about how he hated Scott Frost. And it was a legitimate caller that sounded like a host. That's how big of a rant and a meltdown he was on. And you know, Jeremiah Searles or whoever was doing the game just let him go. It was an amazing hour. I usually call people on my drives. I just sat there and flipped. Just listen, because they've got nine different call-in shows. And then I got to have two beers, watch Wisconsin and Iowa at the gate 8-4 at Omaha Airport, get home, and I was home by 7. Great day. Unbelievable day.
God, I hope that's Northwestern this year's an 11 a.m. kick. I'd love to get home in the same day, but it's like also in 19 Minnesota, Scott Frost comes in here and they get boat raced out of here.
Yeah.
Now that
yeah.
was obviously a different Minnesota team, but it's
there's
no denying Scott Frost has also had a little bit of a PJ Fleck issue. Like Fleck has had an issue with Chris, and he's had one with
Ferentz.
So
he's only been there 24 years. You need me to remind you of his name? You're still at the
what
wedding.
What's
his name? Hayden? No,
Kirk Ferentz. I was about to call Chris Brett Bielema. So I'm like, oh, Jiminy Crickets.
By the way, he's not missing any burgers or beers. Bielema. Jeez. I love him.
Far be it for me to.
Same here. We all have our issues, but he's living the life. But anyway.
So it's just there's so many ways this can go for both teams because there's so many storylines, and you just don't know with the bye week how much is that going to help Minnesota versus Nebraska's eighth straight game versus everything. I mean, I don't know. I'm with Chip. I don't know which way I want to have this thing go in terms of the prediction yet because it's
– Yeah.
I think it's a lot closer than what people think.
I think it's a close game. And I could see where it would be hard to – I'm not a betting man, but if I was, this would be a hard one for me to do just because –
I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole.
No. There's just so much unknowns with both teams, I think, still.
Agreed.
That I just – I wouldn't feel comfortable putting my hard-earned money down on one team.
No.
That's just me.
I wouldn't either. All right. Anything else we want to talk
about
Gophers-wise?
But...
Earned.
Yeah.
Money.
Yeah.
Any other final thoughts on the Gophers?
If they don't open it up this week, and again, open it up, we're just asking them to throw 25 to, say, 28 times against Nebraska. I think that's incredibly realistic. It's just like, if at what point, if it's not going to happen against Nebraska in a pivotal game for you, when is it ever going to happen?
Correct.
All
right. I agree.
So we'll find out 11 o'clock at Huntington Bank Stadium. All right, let's review the game of the weekend in the Big Ten. I talked to you a little bit about this, Chip, the other day. I don't know if it's because I grew up reading the pages of the Star Tribune or whatever. But here's how I think. If Minnesota was Iowa this weekend, I think the story would be, well, they had to win that game. Sean Clifford went out in the second quarter, and they were down 17-3. You were gifted an opportunity. He turned it over twice, but he also had three straight scoring drives, including probably would have been a touchdown if he didn't get smoked, which is part of the conversation. They knocked him out of the game, but when the backup quarterback comes in, fumbles the first snap, and has three straight false starts, you know that game's over. If Iowa doesn't win that game, then they're the biggest frauds in the history of college football. That's how it would be played here in Minneapolis-St. Paul, and it's not.
And that's, well, I would say when you look at their first – 6 weeks and everything that's transpired, if you're not sitting there and saying, if you don't turn this into a spot in the college football playoff, you've
missed your opportunity.
You missed your opportunity.
Yeah.
Because it feels like literally every single thing has gone their way. Every bounce, every, you know, I hate to say a guy getting injured is a lucky, you know, fortunate because you don't want to see a guy get hurt, but I'm not sure they win that game if Clifford.
Well, they're down 17-3 when he goes out.
And he's looking good.
Yes, after his first pick, which was criminal, which was classic. I mean, you can't even make it up, the whole thing. I mean,
it's just.
But again, that's how Iowa plays. Perfect punt. Crowd goes crazy.
Yep.
First play, Clifford rolls out, and it's almost like he just. Literally, it's like that's how I throw a ball to my 7- and 4-year-old to make sure they can catch it.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, just here you go. I'm like, I had in. Okay, put your hands ready. Because the Iowa guy was just standing there. He's like, well, crap, I better catch this. I mean, he literally just soft tossed it to me, and they score. You know, actually, their scoring drive that drive was three plays minus 8 yards for a field goal. I mean, that's so.
It's the most.
Bertie's just shaking his head.
Well, it was incredible. And I knew you were at a wedding. I didn't want to text you, but I got tweets about you, so I can only imagine yours.
I checked my phone once while I was out there, and I had 10 tweets of people being like, hey, just want you to know, four plays, negative 8 yard scoring drive by Iowa.
And they're winning.
And my favorite is, like, I had nothing to do with any of it, and I got included in your whole drama. I want to give them credit because they made enough plays offensively. We'll talk about Petras. It was a great play to win the game, but it's like for 2.5 quarters, no matter how good their defense is, whatever, they had nothing to worry about defensively.
Yeah.
Nothing.
But they have 20 takeaways. They have 16 interceptions.
Mm-hmm.
They're averaging almost 3 interceptions a game. Mm-hmm. It's mind-blowing.
Well, that's where, like, Bill Conley, ESPN, does a lot of great things for analytical writing with college football over there, and that's where he's been comparing Wisconsin and Iowa, two of the very good defenses in the Big Ten, and that's where he's looked at the amount of deflections that have turned into interceptions for both teams.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody want to guess? So Iowa's got 42 pass deflections this year. That's a lot. Anybody want to guess how many of those deflections have then turned into interceptions?
How many deflections? Sorry,
42.
I was looking.
So they have
at
16
these.
Total. So, like, is half of them off deflection? I don't know if half.
So it's 16 interceptions on 42 passes defended. Wisconsin's got 29 passes defended. Anybody want to guess how many interceptions?
Like 7.
2.
2.
It's like both are at very different ends of the spectrum.
Not
here.
Sustainable. Yeah.
And it's just like, get it. Iowa has led, I think I said it last week, they lead college football since 18 in takeaways.
Yes.
But it's also like you watch how some of these things happen, some of these takeaways, and it's like, how does this lucky bounce continue to happen? Again, some of these where it's like Hankins or, you know, whoever the safeties are, corner
Riley
there.
Riley Moss.
Yeah. Yep. You know, they play the ball well, but it's also like there's one or two of these turnovers a week where it's like they are gifted this, like whether that was against Maryland, that was the Dante Demas breaks both of his knees thing, and they get it, and they get it again within the 15, or last week the Justin Jacobs thing. It's like they get one of these each week, and I'm like, how long can that continue to happen where they get one just gifted to them that is a momentum change?
Well, and here's why I'm more frustrated by it, because I wanted to see that game.
Yeah.
I wanted to see it play out like Alabama A&M, like Oklahoma Texas. Now, a backup quarterback went in there. We'll talk about how important a backup is in 2021.
Yeah.
I wanted to see that game. And I thought, I wanted to see, can Iowa come back against Sean Clifford at 17-3? I want to remind people, 17-3 is the score when he goes out. He's threw two picks, but at 146 yards. And after the criminal one, it's pretty damn good.
Yeah,
I mean, we haven't seen a team move that a ball against Iowa like that. They were throwing it all over the place.
Yes.
And so I wanted to see that. And so part of my anger is I feel cheated, because on a bye week where I actually got to watch college football, I want to know what Iowa is, because I still don't feel like we do. I want to believe in Iowa, but I still don't feel like we can.
I didn't get to see the game. When Clifford was in there, were they running the ball at all, or was it just
– They were – I mean, I'll give you his line. I mean, he threw the ball 25 times in a quarter and a half, basically. So,
Which is the way you have to do it against Iowa.
And that was I listened to the inspiration for this podcast, the Yahoo Sports podcast, and Pat Forty, who was at the game, said that when he was doing his work leading up to it and talking to Franklin after, he said, we can't run the ball against Iowa. We have to throw it. 25, I mean, we just talked about Tanner Morgan getting to 25. Yeah. Clifford had that by, you know, 4
20
o'clock.
Minutes into the game.
Yeah, so they were throwing it. And that was what was interesting, is they were protecting him well. He was moving it over the middle. He was taking deep shots.
And you have a big-time
wide receiver. Yeah, and the tight end had a couple of nice plays. Like, they weren't really trying to run the ball much, and really the only time they ran the ball was when the backup quarterback went in. That was the one scoring drive they had, which was a field goal. They basically let Taquan Roberson run, because that was all he was capable of doing. He was not ready for that moment.
I have never seen it. Again, I only watched the highlights back. I'd never seen a quarterback that fresh. I mean, can we also talk about the whole cadence thing that led to like 9 straight false starts?
Yeah.
How they didn't switch it after the first couple of false starts were – Again, you're trying to.
Well, to be fair, 3 of them were right in a row. They didn't have time to switch.
Oh my god!
And you got the center yelling at the guard, like, "I can't hear." He's just screaming at the guy.
At what point? Why didn't they just have we're gonna tap
the
guard?
They finally went to it. Yeah,
but it took boy. I mean, it's just.
Yeah.
How are you Penn State and your crew as well as they do? And again, they're one of those teams where they're not quite Ohio State, where Ohio State selects and they don't have to recruit. I think Penn State's near that tier.
They're top 15, right?
For but sure. Again, I get it. Kinnick's a tough place to come into, especially in that environment. But
they smelled blood once Roberson was out there. They knew what was coming. And then you get a couple false starts. And I mean, they were the 12th man, 100%.
How do you have a guy like that just completely
– You know, their backup quarterback is right now quarterbacking the 6-0 Kentucky Wildcats. I mean, he was – is 2021.
Yes.
I mean, you see Oklahoma has a guy who probably should be the starter, probably will be, Caleb Williams, I think is his name. He comes in and leads him back. Penn State's old backup is –
6-0 Kentucky.
Playing well for Kentucky. They've got College Game Day against Georgia this week. So, like, that's what's fascinating, because you said they've recruited the hell out of every position.
Yes.
And so much so that, you know, Clifford takes over for McSorley, and bang, this quarterback says, I want to go play.
Burns, this might be more for you, too, though, is how much, though, has the quarterback position evolved to where all these guys go to camps, and they have specialists and quarterback guys that – and now you have the transfer portal. And I've always said, if you're a quarterback and there's a guy ahead of you a year or whatever, and you're not starting, transfer.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to – and it's probably hypocritical because I said Dunlop, you're one injury away. But I think that quarterback position is so specialized now, and people spend so much money in the train. I'm talking about high schools.
Correct.
Absolutely. Get to that point that when they've invested so much time and money and specialization in that position, that if you're – you don't want to be a backup.
Right. Well, that's why I give credit to all the Gopher quarterbacks.
I think
Zach Banikstad included. Yeah. I mean, he's probably sitting here going, man, I was the starter 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And Cole Kramer, you can say the same thing. The kid from Texas, Clark.
Yeah.
You've got Cal of the Greek, what do we call him? The Greek missile, the Greek rocket.
The Greek rifle.
Yeah, the Greek rifle. There we go. Yeah. Will we ever know that? I don't know, because Tanner might play for another 9 years. I don't know.
But,
so I give you credit, people that have stuck around, because you're right, Chip. It is not the norm at all.
No, and I, you know, Anixtad, after he lost that job, I thought, and I don't know why, probably just the climate that college sports under, I thought for sure he'd be gone.
Well, it's so strange because Minnesota's got five scholarship quarterbacks
right now.
When they do stay, you're almost like, wow.
Yes.
That's unusual.
Yes.
This guy's staying.
That's a ton for 2021 college football. Yeah. Now, I don't think they'll have five come the end of the spring.
No.
But, I mean, for Iowa now, it's Jeff Brohm this weekend, and Jeff Brohm has been a thorn in the side.
They beat him last year.
Yeah.
I think they beat him at least two of the last 3 years.
And they're a team that'll take shots. Like, they have no illusions
of
running the ball.
Their offense is how you beat Iowa.
Yes.
And you do wonder about, you had such a big game and everything, top five and the emotion of that.
And Riley Moss, after his interception, is dead. I mean,
celebrating.
Yeah, but he wasn't even, like, celebrating. He was just kind of hopping off the field and then went down like he was shot. I mean, you feel terrible for that guy.
I still think they're good enough. They're not going to have that letdown where you're just like, it might be closer than we otherwise, just because you just see the hangover a lot.
It wouldn't surprise me if Purdue does it, just because, again, you look at
It's at Kinnick, though, right?
It is.
It is.
Sold-out crowd.
But you look at college football this year, we've seen as many ranked teams go down.
Yeah.
I think the number's 40 now.
It's insane. I mean, if Alabama can go down, of which Mike Grimm was at that game, your friend there.
Yep.
I think Iowa, by
the way, 11.5 point favorites. And the over-under's 43.
Yeah, gross. I think I'd be more inclined to say that if it was at Purdue.
Yeah.
But being at home, I just think that's their crowd will get them back up into it. You know?
I think you're probably right, yeah. I want to talk about Spencer Petras, because we've talked about the offense and fairness in Petras' act. They're down 17-3. I don't know if I've mentioned that enough today. They were down 17-3. Iowa's first couple possessions, I mentioned the first scoring drive was, you know, four plays, negative 8 yards, four field goals after the interception. They went three and out the next possession, had a pick the possession after that, a punt the next possession after that, and then when it's 17-3, they go on an 11-play, 75-yard drive. And Spencer Petras, I don't know if you guys saw this, on 3rd and 9 at Penn State's 38, finds your guy, Nico Reganey, for a 22-yard first down, and that pass, you can say, gave them life and changed the game. Because it's 3rd and long, they're in the meat grinder. We don't know yet that Clifford is not going to return. We know that he'd been in the 10th and things like that, but I give him credit. He hung in there, he got blasted, put the ball right where it needed to be, first down, and a couple of plays later, they're in the end zone. That pass, that's why I think, you know, coaches like him, because he had another one later in the game on 3rd down where he had to hang in, took a hit. Yeah. And that's because Iowa fans, you know, like everybody, hate their quarterback at times. It's like, that's what the coaches see, and that's why they believe him. It's like, hey, when we needed him and they were taking on water, he took him down the field and made a huge throw to keep the drive alive.
And is he one of those guys, it seems like, instead of asking him to make 10 to 12 plays a game, make 3.
Yeah.
make three critical
throws. That's
about
what he did.
You know?
Oh, yeah. Again, the way Iowa's defense forces turnovers, and then they got the next coming of Ray Guy at punter. I mean,
yeah,
that's where it works for them, and that's where I think it's an interesting kind of look when you look at Tanner Morgan to Mike Sanford and then Brian Ferentz to Spencer Petras in terms of the relationship of what they're asked to do. You know, we saw in the moments when Brian Ferentz actually needs Spencer Petras to make a play. I think the play design was really good, especially on that final touchdown.
It was great.
You know, are we going to be able to see that here? Because I think you're asking both quarterbacks to essentially just be game managers.
Yeah.
And I feel like Ferentz has put Petras and maybe some better opportunities with some of these throws. Again, that third and nine throw, again, tough throw, but even the game-winning throw, I mean, he is running wide open across the field there. And again, it's great play design, and that's where I am very interested to see if we see that here at Minnesota now with how things have kind of evolved here offensively. But yeah, I mean, Petras made the throws when he needed to, and that's kind of the way Iowa's had their quarterback play for seemingly the Ferentz era.
Well,
anything else you want to add to it? I'm watching the fans storm the field at Kinnick here after the final interception.
But this is like the quintessential Kirk Ferentz model.
No question.
With a punter, you even talked about the punter and how our fans cheer.
They went nuts.
And what's punting is winning, or what is the
punting is winning?
You see, he has an NIL. Pat Forty mentioned that he has an NIL deal with some shirt manufacturer that everybody's wearing punting is winning shirts and. And they use him as a weapon, like this punter, you know, being able to
he's tremendous.
Pin him inside. And then you have that defense that's opportunistic and an offense that is just does enough. Is that the right way to phrase it?
That's what they've done.
Yeah.
I mean, enough. Just enough.
Just don't have the killer turnover.
Yep.
Make a play when you're asked to make it.
Yep.
And just be a compliment to the other two phases.
And you look at all their good teams. I mean, whether it's, you know, 02, they were pretty explosive. That was the year Brad Banks was runner-up to Carson Palmer, Heisman Trophy. He could do everything. That was like the one mobile quarterback Ferentz has ever had where he was all over the place. But 04, same thing. Just figure it out. Find a way. That was the year, by the way, they lost. I'm trying to think. They basically couldn't run the ball, and they had to throw it all over the place, and they did.
Was that who's the quarterback then? Was that
Drew Tate?
Drew Tate, yeah.
Drew Back Tate then, yeah. Early on. You know, 09, same thing, opportunistic. 15, same thing, opportunistic. I mean, they've got a blueprint. It's right off the file cabinet. play.
And I saw a stat, I forgot who had the tweet yesterday, that they have the third, I think it was PFF, said they had the third or fourth easiest schedule the rest of the way.
Yeah, because they're in the Big Ten West.
Yeah, because.
And Wisconsin's no good. I mean, that's their toughest game might be Nebraska. In Lincoln at the end of the season, depending on, again, we'll see what both teams, Minnesota and Wisconsin, are this weekend, but they go to Lincoln at the end of the season this year.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you mentioned it to start this whole thing. If Iowa, like if you're an Iowa fan, and again, we're both staring here, Chip, and an Iowa alum here.
I'm not an alum. I never graduated.
That's right.
Yeah.
An Iowa freshman.
Not that proud. Iowa rising, no, falling sophomore. You've got rising sophomores. You've got falling sophomores. That's what I am.
Like if I was ever going to have a year, like this, for them to have a shot at the playoff, again, we'll see how Ohio State has looked like Ohio State the last couple of weeks. Michigan looks incredibly formidable. We'll see how they look when they get, like, I think it's inevitable now unless they just implode that Iowa's going to get to Indianapolis.
Yes, and that's what happens then after, because in 15, when Michigan State beat them in a great game, like that winner went to the playoff. They were both undefeated. Like Ohio State. We were talking about this before, Chip. What if Iowa gets to that game, plays Penn State again, plays Ohio State, whatever? What happens if they lose that game to them? Do they go to the Rose Bowl, which Iowa fans would be perfectly fine with, or do they still get into the playoffs somehow? And that's something we're going to have to talk about in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to eye test on the loss if they did lose. And like you mentioned, Cincinnati's the big wild card out there. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Their Indiana win is not as impressive as it looked preseason, what it might be. Obviously, they beat Notre Dame. But after last year, I think that committee is going to have a hard time leaving them out.
Well, I just think the Pac-12 is going to get left out in this instance.
Well, here's your AP top 25. Georgia, Iowa, Cincinnati, Oklahoma, who, if they make the quarterback change, I mean, they're pretty much a lock.
Yeah.
I don't see them losing the rest of the way. Alabama, after losing to A&M, is 5-1. Ohio State, 6. Penn State, 7. Michigan. Hey, we're going to start talking about them more, too, if this thing goes on. And then Oregon and Michigan State round out the top 10.
Yeah, so it's 5 Big Ten in the top 10, right?
How about Jay Johnson just at Michigan State there? I mean, an explosive Michigan State offense. It is incredible what they're doing out
there.
Yeah,
is Tucker getting enough pub for what he's done there?
Probably not.
He's Big Ten Coach of the Year to me right now.
I would,
without question.
Well, I think part of it is a lot of people are waiting and seeing because Northwestern. They beat Miami. Okay, Nebraska, again, close game.
Yeah,
and then Rutgers. Like, we'll see again. None of us are believers. I mean, they're in the East. They've got the gauntlet.
Got Penn State, Ohio State. Yeah,
Michigan at Purdue, at Ohio State, and Penn State. Like,
let's see.
It's a rough November.
Exactly right. But Jay Johnson, good for him. Good dude. Did a good job while he was here.
You know, maybe he would have fixed the Hero Clays, but again, it is what it is with all the off-field transgressions that happen. But it's also like, I also want to spend like a minute here in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the Jalen Berger thing. So your third dismissed running back.
Yeah.
And you want, again, they win 24-0 because that defense is incredible and they run for whatever they do. But it's also like,
it was like a 10-0 game forever.
We went to a bar and watched it, and Illinois had no shot with their offense.
Right.
And so Wisconsin's offense just had, they
Illinois
were able to
is bad,
run the
and
ball.
It makes that Nebraska loss or Nebraska win for them look.
That was still a head scratcher. Yeah.
But.
But I do like Wisconsin's defense. I think I think their front seven is good.
I just wonder how you fix Wisconsin. Like,
it's all the offensive line, right? I mean, that's what we've heard about, talked about, and the quarterback's the quarterback's no good.
And I don't think that, again, I don't think Ches Malusi's the answer long term. Maybe it's Braylon Allen who finally got some carries here. He's only 17 years old.
They're not, you know, Malusi's not as bad as
He's okay
combination. But I just don't think the line is great.
But I watched Jonathan Taylor house it on like the first play of the game on Monday Night Football. It's like, that's the difference. Yeah.
He's not Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah, that's the difference.
But they're okay. I don't think the line's as imposing as they have been in the past. And so I think a lot of it's he's having to create as much.
Yeah.
But, the quarterback and their defense is good.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they will continue to be. And they're still going to win 7 games, 8 games this year because of that defense. Well, but it's just.
That's such a good point. Because that's like fans over there. This happens in Iowa, too. I mean, the programs that Minnesota's trying to compete with. It's like, you even look at Barry Alvarez. He'd mix in a 7-6 every now and then, right? Mm-hmm. Bielema would mix in a 7-6. Like, winning 11 games at these programs every year is not, that's, to use your phrase,
not your birthright.
Not sustainable. No. And, like, you are going to have dips, even if you've recruited better, and because it's just, that's just kind of the way it works. And they're going to have some type of dip every once in a while. It's like Chris went, like, 10-10-10, right, in terms of victory, maybe even 12 a couple of times. Like, you're not just going to turn the lights on and have that happen. So, but it is interesting to see them go through things that you don't associate them with, kicking guys off the team.
Line play. Yeah.
Quarterbacks that we've talked about it forever, for 30 years, going back to John Stocko, they've hated their quarterback, right? So that's nothing new. They probably hated Darrell Bevell, and he took him to a Rose Bowl. The only quarterback they haven't hated is Russell Wilson, and they had him for a year. So that's what, you know, there's some things that they've always kind of had these types of issues, but just the kind of the instability, I think, is what is.
The formula is different this time than what we've
seen. It seems like it. So I don't know, but tell you what, like, last year, I think we talked about the Nebraska game for the Gophers, like how that was a nice victory. Like, I think last year's Wisconsin game was one of the biggest missed opportunities we had.
100%.
Because 100%. Of what they were down to, just the whole situation. Again, I was the only one in
couldn't score.
They couldn't. And
they still can't.
You got the interception. You had the missed field goal. Like, and 5 years from now, no one's going to say, oh, what happened that game? They're just going to go, oh, 2020, Gophers went to Madison and got the axe. Like, they've had it 2 of the last 3 years.
Even
like, all of that
the
stuff
year,
matters.
This year for Minnesota, you get Wisconsin at home.
Huge game.
Yeah. This is a fantastic opportunity for to beat a Wisconsin team that doesn't look very good this year.
What else do you guys want to talk about? We got like 2 minutes. Anything else on your mind?
Well, this weekend, I will say, reminded me why this is the greatest sport ever invented. Seriously.
Are you sure you were just breathing that Wisconsin air with your family?
I mean,
intoxicated by love.
I know some people don't like the college game because of how the scoring and the defense is not great, and every game's, 45-40. The drama of what happened Saturday across all conferences, close finishes, the back and forth shootouts, just reaffirmed that there's nothing better to me. There's nothing better than college football.
Have you seen the video of the Texas A&M kicker's family?
No.
Yes.
No.
Oh, yeah.
They're the one who made the game-winning kick. It's like his dad, his mom, and presumably his girlfriend.
I think it's his wife.
His wife? Oh, good for him. Yeah. Nicely done.
Yeah.
They just have a camera on them. It's like 30 seconds of the anticipation They're screaming. Mom crumbles and cries. Dad takes his hat off.
Eyes closed.
Yeah.
Just
wife starts crying, and then she's just gone. Just vanishes to the field.
She leaps
to the because everybody else was. Yeah. She's like, I gotta go, and that says it all. But like that doesn't. I was actually talking to Lindsay Whalen about this on Monday because she was saying the same thing. Like, I've really gotten it. Like the college sports, there's nothing like it. It's like, I love the Vikings, but it's like, that's not happening at Vikings Lions. You know, as much as Kirk Cousins tried to recreate that moment with Mike Zimmer, like, one's rushing the field to go kiss their husband or whatever after you beat Alabama in front of 70,000 people. It was an amazing video.
Said at Texas A&M? 106,000.
Yeah, I believe that. Also said the Friday night yell thing is the strangest thing he's ever been to.
That's right.
So
trust me, he'll go on for about 20 minutes. He asks him about it. He'll go into excruciating detail.
But let's just hope it doesn't come up during the PJ Fleck show today.
And that's where you look at like the Big Ten schedule this week. It's pretty blah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, the game day game this week is Georgia Kentucky, 1 versus 11. Oh. Georgia's a 24-point favorite. Okay.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, that's our game of the week.
Yeah.
So you got Army Wisconsin. You have Purdue, Iowa, Rutgers, Northwestern, Minnesota, Nebraska, and Michigan State, Indiana.
Yeah. Yeah. You can go to the orchard this weekend. If you need to get your family photos or pumpkins, this is the time.
Pick apples this
weekend. Yeah.
It's supposed to be beautiful, by the way, on Saturday. I think 58 degrees, 60 degrees, and sun.
I'm traveling to – I got the Vikings this weekend, so I will not be at the Gopher game.
I'm
going to beat you to the press box, and Rofnack and I are going to be like, well, where's Chip?
Yeah, I mean, the other Oklahoma State, Texas, I'm just trying to see where are the other good games. BYU, Baylor.
We needed a week. College football needed a week to recover after
that. Take a breather?
Saturday. Yeah.
Take a breather?
Kind of like Burnsy. We need to recover.
Yeah.
Well, I get to come back to, again, this game for both teams, for a variety of reasons with Minnesota and Nebraska, is gigantic.
Yep.
I am incredibly intrigued to see the tweaks that both teams make. And, again, I'm intrigued to see if Joe Rossi can slow down Adrian Martinez, because – that offensive line is not good for the Huskers, but the way Martinez has been using his legs to scramble and make plays, it's going to be a tough test for them.
Over under Iowa interceptions against Jeff Brohm, 7?
I was going to say 3.
Well, they're
going
to throw it 50 times, so there's the opportunities are going to be there.
Well, that's even Jeff Brohm said after the Gopher game. He said, well, we throw it a lot, so you know bad things are going to happen every once in a while. That's just kind of part of the deal.
I'll set the over 3.5.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
How many times will a guy fumble after dying on the field?
Where,
right. Well, that's the next thing. Yeah. Is you know all like 10. Well, and to be fair, this happened to the Gophers in 2019. Rondale Moore and the quarterback both got hurt on the same play in Purdue.
Yep.
Gophers had three backup quarterbacks go against them. Like that. Sometimes it's just your
sometimes
year.
Sometimes it happens. Yeah.
And I loved how you phrased it, Chipper. Like, if not now, when to get into the playoff? If you're the Iowa Hawkeyes, because the road is certainly paved for you. All right, guys. Good stuff. Good to see everybody.
Good to see you.
Glad we all survived bye weekend. You in Wisconsin. You at a wedding. Me at Great Wolf Lodge. We were all in harm's way.
We live an exciting life, don't we?
Well, the Great Wolf Lodge is like Vegas for kids. One night is enough. Two is too many.
Yeah.
The next one, after two nights, I went there for spring break with our neighbors. I looked at my guy. Have you ever been to Vegas? My neighbor, John, said, yeah. I go, I feel like day three of Vegas, it's like, I just want to get the hell home. We should have taken the red eye last night, but we didn't. Thanks, everybody. Thanks again to Northern Lids, northernlids.com, to check out their entire selection of awesome patch hats. They're beautiful. They can make whatever you want at northernlids.com. Appreciate their patronage on the podcast, and we will talk to you next week on Pair and a Spare.